Hello, listener. Welcome to the latest edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes. My name's Steve Fielding. I'm an academic, but don't hold that against me. And I'm joined by Emma Burnell, who is... There are so many things that you are, Emma.
One of them is not an academic.
I think that's the best thing to be, not academic.
Journalist and student.
Yes.
And layabout, which is, you know, goes with both of the territories, really.
It does. It certainly does. And what we're going to do today is, along the theme that we explore during these various podcasts, is the relationship between popular culture and politics. And what we're going to do today is look back at a play, or two plays really, that Dennis Potter, the now very late Dennis Potter, wrote in the middle 1960s for the BBC. The reason why, the ostensible reason why, is the sad recent death of Keith Barron, who played the character, the main character in both the plays, of Nigel Barton. Keith Barron turned up in all kinds of things during a very long and productive life as an actor, including, I think, for a certain generation of middle-aged people, Duty Free.
Yeah, this is the thing. For me, Keith Barron is that cheeky chappy from Duty Free. Watching him in Nigel Barton was a revelation.
Yes, it turns out Keith Barron was in fact an actor.
Yeah.
Who could play many, many parts. And Nigel Barton is a... Bearing in mind this is the 1960s, is a young man. Who's made it from a working class, a mining background. He goes to Oxford, and one of the plays is all about his rise from being working class, from the working class family, into the lower reaches of the middle class. It takes him to Oxford, which is a journey that Dennis Potter himself made. And it's very autobiographical. And in the second play, because the first play is called Stand Up Nigel Barton. That's the teacher talking. And in the second play, which is Vote, Vote, Vote for Nigel Barton, takes the same character through a by-election, standing for the Labour Party. He's a young, idealistic, or tries to be idealistic, kind of socialist member of the Labour Party, Harold Wilson's Labour Party. And again, this echoes Dennis Potter's own experience, because he stood for the Labour Party in a hopelessly unwinnable, very strong Conservative seat in the 1964 general election, which is the same kind of a seat that Nigel Barton stands in. So these are very, very autobiographical, but they raise themes and issues which in the 1960s and the 1950s were very germane, because they deal with a person who is coming up the social ladder. It's about social mobility. About the issues that are raised when someone from the working class leaves the working class and enters the middle class. And also in the second of the plays, it raises issues of socialism, electability, whether you what you should compromise on. Should you tell the people what they want, or should you try to change what they think? And these are issues which, as I say, were kind of germane to his own life, Dennis Potter's life. There's a whole generation of people who rose up from the working class and entered the middle class. Not as many, maybe, as we thought, but certainly some. And, of course, it raises issues which are contemporary today about people's identity, what they take with them. And also, in particular, the second play raises issues that evoke contemporary debate within the Labour Party of Jeremy Corbyn.
It's extraordinary, you know, plus ça change. Yeah, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
You said that very sassy way.
Well, I am very sassy.
Absolutely, but particularly sassy, yes.
In fact, on one of my essays, one of my comments from my lecturers, this is a very sassy comment, so you can't say fairer than that. I've lost my train now.
I'm terribly sorry. I do apologise.
I think that the class issue in particular is something that we sort of forgot about for a really, really long time in left-wing politics. We tried to move beyond class. And I think in some ways we are returning to a conversation about class. Some of it drives me absolutely mental because there is this false dichotomy that is being brought out in left-wing politics at the moment where you're either into the class argument or you're into identity politics. So you can't be feminist and socialist. To which I say bollocks, obviously. Or maybe not bollocks because that's not the most feminist of words. But... it is certainly true that we stopped talking about issues of class, the Tony Blair, we're all middle class now stuff. And a lot of people felt very left behind. And that's, we've seen that in Brexit, we've seen that in Trump. If you stop talking about class, that doesn't mean that class tensions don't exist. It means that you're not dealing with them. And the tensions within Nigel Barton himself, within the Barton family, within his own relationship where he is married to or meets a woman at college, and I think a different woman that he's
married It's a different actor in the second play, yeah. Which is the same character.
Is it the same character?
I think it's meant
sure.
to be the same
right.
character, yes.
But she is much posher than him and much more left-wing, which again is an interesting some parallel with some of what we've seen in modern life. There are huge class tensions, and Nigel, those happen within Nigel himself, and I don't think they're quite resolved.
No. In the first play, he is clearly, to some extent, ashamed of his father in particular, who's a minor. And his father also resents his son, who's gone to Oxford. He's proud of him, but he resents him.
Yeah.
Because the thing about his father, he ends up a minor, but his father had skills. He had potential. There's a reference to him being able to draw a perfect apple. And those capabilities, that potential was completely snuffed out in his life because he went down the pit. So Nigel is something that he wanted to be, and he's proud of his son, but he also resents his son to some extent. And his son also resents his father for the way that he spits into the grate. It shows up the tensions of social mobility. And then, of course, Nigel goes to Oxford he's very, very ambiguous about Oxford as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's treated quite badly by the Oxford crowd. He hates having a... I mean, is that... I have obviously not gone to Oxford. But do you really get, like, a servant?
I went to Cambridge and we did have...
Did you have a servant?
We had... It wasn't quite as developed as that because in Nigel Barton, the servant does his shoes, gets him up in the morning, he effectively treats him as his, as an employer. When I was at Cambridge, we did have what were called scouts, which I have no idea where that phrase comes from. And these would be women rather than men and would clean.
A cleaner in halls.
Yes, no, they would, no, she would do my bed. I mean, if I let her, I mean, I didn't like it. This is all getting a bit autobiographical. there were people in my college who apparently were used to having servants, and so they did lots for them because they were used to it. And my mum was a cleaner, and so I wasn't very comfortable.
Yeah. With my mum was a cleaner.
Somebody doing this for me, so she didn't. She had a good deal with me. She didn't really do that much, but. But yes, you did. You did, and you. I think you still do, depending. You have somebody that does for you.
Does for you. Yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, that's the phrase, isn't it? It's extraordinary. I mean, we had a... When I was in halls, there was someone who would empty the bin. But that was about it.
Yeah, well...
And she was lovely. She would try to do more for me than I would let her.
Mm.
But I was a total slob. So I was like, I literally cannot make you clean this room.
Yes. But in stand-up Nigel Barton, I forget what they call them in Oxford, but not a servant, but the person who does, there is resentment because Nigel is himself uncomfortable that there's a man who's the age of his father
doing his
shoes, and he wants him to talk, why do you call me sir, he asks him. And the guy is clearly uncomfortable.
Yes.
He wants to call him sir.
He wants to call him sir. He knows what his right, he knows his place, as the phrase is.
Yes.
And again, it's an extraordinary sort of illustration of those class tensions. Nigel is probably more working class in some ways than this guy, but is elevated. And there's a terrible, and throughout Stand Up Nigel Barton in particular, I think it's less addressed in the second one, which is more about party politics.
Yes.
But throughout Stand Up Nigel Barton, at no point does Nigel Barton feel comfortable in his own skin.
Mm.
At no point does he feel comfortable in his own class. He is too clever for the kids in school and is bullied for it. He is too working class for his Oxford mates and is ridiculed for it. He is too posh for his dad's working man's club and is ridiculed for it. He slags off his own parents on telly.
Yes, as Dennis Potter did in real life.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So it's quite an autobiographical.
It's very it's very autobiographical. But at least at the end of that of all of that, he realizes that he really should stop resenting and denigrating his family. It's a kind of a crisis that he has.
And I think that's partly triggered because a journalist goes and asks his parents how they feel about it. And there's a wonderfully iconic moment where the journalist arrives at the Barton household and Mrs. Barton is cleaning the step, which is the metaphor for that sort of proud working class woman, isn't it? You cleaning your front step. And it's almost overused, but I think it probably wasn't at that point. So there's a lot about pride. And pride in who you are. And I think where Nigel Barton is struggling is he's not sure where his pride comes from. Does it come from where he's got to, or does it come from where he's come from?
Where he's come from, yeah. So there was a kind of an archetype that Nigel Barton is expressing of the scholarship boy, and boy being the operative word, because social mobility didn't apparently happen to working class girls, it happened to working class boys at this period in time. And so it's a sort of recognisable archetype where you don't know where you are. And so it's sort of a dramatisation of a social type. And Potter was that social type. How many of them...
I think you mean Barton. Potter was the last podcast.
Well, Potter... No, Dennis Potter.
Dennis Potter. Yes, Dennis, I apologise.
Dennis Potter. Dennis Potter was the... yeah. It's an archetype that Dennis Potter actually was. And he dramatises his own dilemma. And across the piece, I mean, in terms of TV drama films of this time, there were often characters like this. If unfortunately Rodney Bewes, who died not too long before after Keith Barron,
just after.
Of course, he's most famous for The Likely Lads or Whatever Happened to The Likely Lads, and Rodney Bewes played the character that had risen up from the working class, and of course his friend hadn't. And the whole programmes were a sort of debate between themselves about what have I lost, what have I gained. You know, I've got my own home and car on the Elm Lodge housing estate. I go playing badminton with my wife and my new friends, but he really wants to go and also have a drink.
Go down the pub and
watch the football. Mm. So these are kind of debates and issues that have been dramatised and turned into comedy as well, because they are quite funny issues.
Yeah.
But they are about identity, about who am I, where am I going, where have I come from, what do I think about them now and these people who I'm now consorting with. And so Stand Up Nigel Barton is one of a type. I'm not sure we have that kind of drama necessarily today, which really took on class very starkly. Maybe we're too sophisticated. And maybe gender and other identities have taken over, and class, which remains the most compelling, you know, ways in which our identities are formed, along with all those other identities. But it's kind of back of the queue.
Well, it certainly has been, and that's very much become a tension that's come to the forefront. I think if you look at a recent drama that's dealt with class, it's probably Shameless. And that's not dealt with class in a very good way. I would say it's a bunch of middle class people being really quite nasty about the working class.
Poverty
porn.
It's part of poverty porn, isn't it? Where people just look down their noses. Yeah. And that is not what the Nigel Barton plays are doing.
No, not at all. Almost the antipathy of it.
Mm.
The Nigel Barton plays don't give you an answer. That's part of what is so good about them. There aren't simple answers to this. I mean, for myself, I mean, I mean, you can tell from the way my accent bounces around. I'm smack bang in the middle of the middle class, but I grew up in Hackney when it wasn't Hackney, and so my accent goes from quite sort of London Cockney to quite middle class within the space of a sentence.
Mm.
I mean, it's really quite complex. And so my own class identity is really quite complex. I do not know where I fit. I've been involved in Labour politics for years, decades. And I can be in quite a few rooms in Labour Party politics where I feel like the chavvy one.
Mm.
And that's a weird thing because I'm, you know, I'm about, you know, I grew up in a nice big house. So for me to feel like the chavvy one, imagine how the people that the Labour Party was formed to represent feel in any given room.
Well, that's a neat segue into the... It was talking about the second play of the Nigel Barton plays, Vote, Vote, Vote for Nigel Barton, which, as I said, takes the Nigel Barton story beyond Oxford, and he's now a journalist who has stood in this hopeless Conservative seat in a general election. And unfortunately for him, and also for the Conservative, the victorious Conservative dies in a hunting accident.
That's right.
Right at the start, causing a by-election. And so Nigel has got to go, he feels obliged to go and fight the seat again. It's a hopeless seat. What's the point, he asks himself. And so there's a debate which he has with his very left-wing and very posh wife about whether he should. And she is scathing about the Labour Party, isn't she? This is the Labour Party of Harold Wilson.
Yeah.
The play came out, the TV play came out in 1965. Wilson's Prime Minister by this point. Labour's the modernising
white heat
party. It's the party that's, Labour seems to have made the breakthrough. It's appealing to middle class voters, lower middle class voters, not just working class voters. It's now an electoral force again. So that's the context. And Nigel, through duty, goes back to this seat. He's a socialist. He's got very various concerns about what he has to do. But it's basically a story about how the agent, the constituency agent, tries to get Nigel to behave in order to win votes, to at least get a respectable, vote. But ostensibly, you know, right behind all of this is, well, what is modern politics about, electoral politics? Is it about trying to change how people think? Is it about socialism? Is it about, you know, really big ideas and changing, challenging things? Or is it simply trying to get people to come and vote for you and to get you into office, any old how, and then we can try and do something with that? There's a pragmatic, idealistic kind of division, which Labour has been defined by from its very existence. And of course, in the 1960s, it had gone in a pragmatic direction with Wilson. And today, of course, this is why watching Vote, Vote, Vote for Nigel Barton is quite interesting. Labour's going through a slightly different phase, but the issues are the same.
Yeah, yeah, and that tension is real and not easily resolvable because there are good arguments on both sides. You can't do anything without power, but what is power without principle? Those are both decent questions that. It is the endless debate within the Labour Party to find a sensible space to solve that. I mean, there are two sets of questions, I think, that come out particularly of the second Nigel Barton, which are, does electoral politics work? You know, what is the point of electoral politics? And there's some awful and very recognisable scenes where Nigel and the agent are going around to various houses and the voters are being just dreadful.
Racist. Uninterested. I mean, actively uninterested.
Aggressively,
yes. There's also Labour Party meetings.
Labour Party meetings where it's all about the raffle.
Yes.
Which is so familiar.
Yes. It's interesting, though, that all of these disappointing electors, the disappointing members, they're largely women, aren't they?
Yeah, yes.
There's a big gender thing going on
there. There's a big gender thing going on there. I mean, you get a range of annoying people who are women. So you get the racist voter right the way through the spectrum to the basically SWP wife. you know, the disinterested and the too interested.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, women play a problematic role in Dennis Potter's dramas, yes. As they did apparently in his own life, but we won't necessarily go there. So the point is that Nigel, the idealistic socialist, is being suppressed by his agent, who basically, the agent tells him to just say anything. Suck it up, do what you have to say, get your hair cut, just get as many votes as you possibly can, and let's just see what happens. But Nigel, towards the end of the play, I think this is a clip that might be useful to show at this point, towards the end of the play, he decides he's going to let it all go. Is it a civic function where the main speaker is his conservative rival, who gives such an awful kind of self-satisfied speech about how wonderful things are, and it's to an audience of local business people.
Yeah.
So it's not a Labour-friendly audience.
Basically, the Rotary Club.
Rotary Club. But Nigel, because of the election, is meant to just be polite back, to respond to the speech, and to basically to get through the night and not offend anybody. But by this point, he decides, you know what, I'm actually just going to have my say.
Do not misunderstand me, ladies and gentlemen. Rudeness for its own sake is a distressing thing.
Yeah.
I have no desire to be churlish. It's simply that, suddenly, I've had enough. More than enough. I too would like to swap bromides with you. I too would like to think of my country's greatness every time I flush the lavatory.
Be polite, I said. Polite.
But no, I'm sorry, I can't join you in this euphoric make-believe. Not anymore.
Hallelujah.
We are not characters out of Alice in Wonderland, are we?
You are. What's the matter with the fellow?
Yet we have just had put before us, by a man brave enough to shake another's dirty hand, the marvellous picture of a hitherto prosperous, classless, opportunity-free Britain basking in a rare contentment. Now, we've all just had a good dinner. A privilege, of course, not enjoyed by the vast majority of the world's people. Fat black flies suck away undisturbed at the vacant eyes of newly born babies, and the dogs wait to eat the watery excrement left by starving beggars on the stinking pavements. But we've eaten well tonight, and no doubt we're all feeling pretty good inside. But that's no reason why we should pretend to believe in rubbish. Surely the first fact we must face is that all three parties are stuffed with aged tub thumpers and superannuated old windbags. To most intelligent people, party politics is synonymous with claptrap. To be a candidate is to submit to a personally humiliating experience in which the set smile freezes on your face like the grin on a corpse. Dead ideas, dead thoughts, dead slogans, all of them sicked up on your own doorstep. No wonder people are disgusted by this gruesome charade. This withered apology for conviction, compassion, and passion, which ought to be driving through all the apathy, bewilderment, and cynicism which even the antediluvian guest of honour here tonight realises is there.
Sit down, just for one moment, sir,
as soon as I've filled your three bags full, sir.
God, please make him choke.
Let us just examine this myth of affluence, this cheap jack assumption about the opportunity state. My father, for instance.
Have you got one?
My father has been a coal miner for 41 years. although it's only fair to say that some of those years were spent on the dough. Some of them were spent kicking tin cans, marching to London, and some of them were even spent eating bread and dripping sandwiches during the grouse shooting season. But now things are better. Oh, yes. People like you don't spit in his eye quite so easily. And my parents have their bingo and their Daily Mirror. Hand beat the clock at the London Palladium on the telly, which they've also got. Oh, yes, there's no possibility of them being shunted into an old folks' prison. Not while I'm alive, anyway. But my father could draw an apple on the white margin of a newspaper. So good, so ripe, so perfectly rounded and shaded that you just ached to pluck it off the page. When he talks about the past, he remembers the colour the sky was, the way the sun glistened and glinted on the belts and buckles of the village brass band, and the slow, damp feel of the mist flopped out along the bottom of the desecrated valley. The dark lane with the drooping trees, roots heaving up above the poisonous soil. But his talents, so long unused, are now unusable. And his sensibilities, so long blunted and derided in the holy name of the money grubbers, are swallowed up by the bright gay new exploiters all around us. And if he coughs now and again, if he spits against the hot bars of the grate and makes them sizzle now and again, if he's got the rattle of coal dust in his chest, well, it doesn't really matter very much, does it, folks? He can get into the local cinema, half price, Monday and Wednesday afternoon. And it doesn't matter very much if 1.5 million old-age pensioners have to apply for the national assistance in order to live a reasonably decent life. And that's why I object to the cretinous lies which have been spouted out here tonight. We in Britain have got cricks in our necks from looking backward over our shoulders at the alleged glories of the past. For God's sake, let's try and be honest. Just for once. Or do we have to sell our party politics like the 14th brand of dog food now in the market? Can't even Captain Archibald Lake, bless his patriotic old heart, see the shameful horror of his own miserable, half-baked, scarcely literal platitudes.
So he ends up basically, not that you can see it, dear listener, doing the V's at the Conservative candidate, which then is splashed across the front page of the local newspaper. And whatever hope Labour had of doing a decent performance, that's it. Barton's chances of using a good by-election performance to build a political career, that's out of the window.
That's gone.
But the really interesting thing about that is that the agent, who has been depicted as, like all agents are in political dramas, really, the agent is like the heart of darkness.
Svengali.
Yeah, kind of the person, the cynic, we just want to get votes, we don't care about ideas, just do what you need to do to get the votes out. At the very end, he looks at the camera and gives a little speech where he says to the viewers that, you know, you might think, you know, that I'm this person, you know, because up to this point, everyone thinks he is this person. And he says, well, I'm not really like this. I didn't start out like this. The reason why I'm cynical, the reason why I think politics is just about getting people to vote for you, you know, racists, any kind of people to vote for you, is because you people out there, you know, the reason why Nigel Barton is just had a basic nervous breakdown, it's because you people, you don't want the politics that Nigel Barton wants. You don't want this kind of politics. So you force us to be what we're not. And I think that's a really interesting thing. Because first of all, it's very rare that you get a character breaking down the fourth wall as one knows it as. Yeah. Well, just directly talking to the viewer, pretending, no longer pretending that they're doing it and somebody's watching.
But certainly in the 60s, that must have been quite an extraordinary. I mean, it happened more and more, but that would have been very unusual.
And clearly, you know, I don't know what effect it had on the audience themselves, but it's very powerful. And it's actually making, instead of the viewer going, oh, look at all these politicians, they're all the same, cynical, you know, useless, it's actually turning around and saying, no, hang on a minute, you're part of this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You've got some responsibility
in
some of this.
Challenging the voters themselves, which is, you know, that kind of, too much, I think, and I know we've talked about this before, too much political drama goes a bit too easy on the voters and a bit too hard on politicians.
Yes.
And so this is a really interesting turnaround where, you know, there's a reason politicians behave the way they do, and it's because you can't behave any other way and get elected. And I think that vote for Nigel Barton makes that point really well. Mm. Of course politicians are compromised, because politics in itself is the art of compromising. Now, at the moment, we're in a very uncompromising moment in politics, which is why half the country are voting for Jeremy Corbyn and half the country are voting for Theresa May, and they are both on the more extreme ends of their parties. Now, all we're doing, there's almost no meeting in the middle. If you look at Brexit, you know, Remainers want a hard Remain, Brexiteers want a hard Brexit. Actually, there's a whole lump of people in the middle who probably would settle for something else, but they are not part of the debate.
But then, is that their fault? Or is it the fault of politics for not bringing them into that debate?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? I don't think that is solved. It's the question that's posed rather than solved by vote for Nigel Barton. Mm. And I'm not sure that there is an answer, a simple answer. If politics, the state of politics, is all of our fault, then it's all of our choice to make it different. That we haven't done so is not the fault of politicians or the fault of voters, but the fault of everybody.
Yes, and well, if there was a simple answer, then the answer would have come to us by now. But the reason why there's many reasons why the Nigel Barton plays, but in particular vote for Nigel Barton, is still germane to our own times, is the way that it poses it as a problem.
Yeah,
that it's far too easy, and this is what populist politicians in reality have done to blame. You know, Nigel Farage, I think, recently tweeted that he didn't have, you know, his contempt for career politicians. He didn't express how much contempt he had. And of course, he is a career politician, using hostility to career politicians.
Yeah. And to be fair, I can't express how much contempt I have for Nigel Farage, so.
Well, it's early in the day at this point in time. Maybe a few gin and tonics.
Maybe a few gins down, I might get there.
You could get the words, I don't know. But the way in which this sort of dichotomy between politicians up there and you, the people down here, and how they have betrayed you, because you're great, honest, decent folk, aren't you? Well, actually, I'm not saying that you're not, but you have some responsibility, you know. Yeah. The reason why those people are up there is partly because of you.
They're
a reflection of you, maybe a distorted one. So it's the way that at least Barton or Potter through the Barton plays sort of poses it. Mm. But it is interesting as well that basically after contesting, I forget what the real constituent, maybe it was in High Wycombe or somewhere like that, that Potter, Dennis Potter, really did contest in October 1964. He abandoned politics completely after that point. So he didn't continue the fight. He just abandoned Labour politics and wrote dramas about all kinds of things, but not about politics, not directly, at least. So, in many ways, he didn't really live up to his own kind of argument, which maybe was a bit sad. But it's an interesting play in all kinds of different ways. It's more how Labour politics hasn't changed since the 60s. That the basic issues are there, and also that the problem hasn't been solved.
And maybe it is not a solvable problem. Maybe these tensions exist, if you say. I mean, I don't know that there's a right answer. I think possibly too many people think that there is a right answer, and that's what's causing an awful lot of the friction and the tension within the Labour Party, or and now the Conservative Party, who are having their own little meltdown at the moment, or quite big meltdown actually, rather than everybody sort of coming to the conclusion that the answer lies somewhere in between.
But also maybe that, I mean, this is what I think the referendum result, or responses to the referendum result kind of suggested, was that some people think that once democracy has provided an answer, that's the answer. Yeah. You have to stick with it.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
people
yeah.
have spoken, yeah. right? Now we need to move on and do something on the basis. But the people speak every day. Yeah. Their opinions shift and change.
Yeah, yeah.
The answers are always different. The questions often are very different. So, I mean, democracy is a process, a very messy process. And so there will not be a definitive answer to the problems that
yeah.
Nigel Barton throws up. Because if there was a definitive answer, we'd be living in a dictatorship.
Well, yeah.
I suspect.
Yeah, benign or otherwise, but yes. I mean, it's not... Politics is messy for a reason, because people are messy. And politics is the art of representing the people. And ultimately, we're all a bit of a mess. Happy New Year.
Yes, we're particularly in a mess in the early part of any new year. But I think
on that bombshell,
we are all a mess.
We're all a mess.
I think that's an appropriate point at which to end this very carefully crafted and not at all messy podcast. So what I should do, I'm trying to be officious here.
Having told you you're all a mess.
Yes, and I need to be a bit more organised. So if you've liked this podcast, and if you like the series of which it is part, I implore you as much as any human can of another human to rate us on iTunes. That would be extremely helpful. Thank you very much. Happy New Year to you. And this podcast will now end on me reminding you that this has been a Political Human production.